Hello, fellow law nerds. Welcome to another episode of Boom Lawyered, a Rewire radio podcast hosted by the journalism team that believes that children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. I'm Imani Gandhi.
And I'm Jess Piclo. Rewire.news is dedicated to bringing you the best reproductive rights and social justice news, analysis, and commentary on the web. And the Team Legal podcast is part of that mission. So thank you all for subscribing and listening. So we told you the First Amendment was hot right now, and we were not kidding.
We really weren't. We talked about it in our very first episode, which you should absolutely listen to, like right now. Seriously, what are you doing here? Go do it. We'll still be here when you get back.
Imani, it's a pre-recorded podcast, so we won't actually still be here.
Hey, I might still be here. You don't know my life. I could be a ghost in the machine.
A ghost in the machine? What?
A ghost in the machine, Jessica.
Oh my God. Okay, Imani. All right. This episode, we're going to talk about free speech, expressive conduct, going topless is protest speech, and whether or not you can refuse to bake a cake for a same-sex couple and call that free speech too. Oh, and we're going to answer listener questions, so stay tuned. All right, so we've got another big First Amendment fight at the Supreme Court. On December 5th, the court's going to hear arguments in Masterpiece Cake Shop. This is a case out of Colorado where a baker has refused to bake a wedding cake for a same-sex couple. He's arguing the First Amendment protects his right to turn the couple away.
Basically, the guy argued that if he was forced to serve gay customers, it would be the same thing as the government forcing him to endorse marriage equality, which he doesn't believe in because Jesus says being gay is a sin. And it doesn't matter that Colorado law prohibits discriminating against someone for being gay. This means you can't refuse to rent them a house, give them a job, or yes, even bake them a cake just because they are gay. But here, the baker said, nope, I can refuse to serve gay couples because baking a cake is quote-unquote expressive conduct and protected by the First Amendment. The attorneys for the bakery are arguing that its owner, quote, intends to and does in fact communicate through, close quote, the cakes the bakery sells. In other words, baking a cake is some kind of First Amendment expression of his beliefs.
Okay, let's back up for a second. Imani, what is expressive conduct?
That's a fine question, Jessica, and I'm going to answer it for you. In non-lawyer speak, it's where speech and action meet under the First Amendment. So let's think about the NFL players taking a knee, or think about burning a flag in protest, or wearing a protest t-shirt to school. All of these things send a message, even if there are no words coming out of your mouth. And as far as the First Amendment goes, that can be protected speech.
Okay, sure, but we also know that free speech isn't absolute, right? Like, you can't yell fire and cause a riot and then say, no big deal, what I did is protected speech because I'm really protesting fire ordinances, so therefore no consequences for me, right? Like, all of our constitutional rights, we have a balance between the individual freedom to go bananas and say and do whatever you want and the need to keep the public peace. And because lawyers are the worst, the law has made a really mushy test for determining when conduct like baking a cake is protected speech and when it's not.
We lawyers love our mushy tests. We also love three-prong tests. What is it with lawyers and three-prong tests? We love mushy three-prong tests.
Yeah, we sure do.
So what's this mushy test then? I bet it's three prongs.
Oh, what a guess. So basically, the law says that to be expressive conduct, what you are doing must comprehensively communicate its own message without speech.
So in other words, I can look at what you are doing and immediately understand what your message or cause is without you having to explain it to me?
Exactly. The conduct itself must convey a message that can be readily understood to those who view it. The law calls this a limiting principle, which means basically the line where conduct isn't protected by the First Amendment.
But that's not it, because of course it's not, because lawyers make everything difficult. So to test when the government has overstepped on regulating conduct, the courts made another test. That test is, the regulation is within the constitutional power of the government. Two, the regulation furthers an important or substantial government interest. Three, that governmental interest is unrelated to the suppression of free expression. And four, the restriction on alleged First Amendment freedoms is no greater than essential to further the government's interest. So here we have the baker, and the Department of Justice is backing them up on this argument because Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III can't hate on gay people enough. So we have the baker arguing that the Colorado Colorado Civil Rights Ordinance goes too far in regulating speech because there's no real governmental interest in protecting LGBTQ people from discrimination. And even if there were, the baker's right to express his own beliefs by baking a cake trumps that ordinance.
We should probably point out that the Baker and DOJ's argument isn't necessarily limited to Colorado's non-discrimination ordinance. It's really an attack on civil rights laws generally.
Right. And if we follow the rights argument here, then could someone refuse to bake a cake for a baby shower for a gay couple? What about folks who perform music or cater the food or provide wedding flowers? Do they have free rein to deny services to Jewish or Muslim couples because they are not Christian? I mean, look, some evangelicals still oppose interracial marriage. So what happens to civil rights in general here? This is a huge issue that the Gorsuch Court is about to weigh in on. And it really is one of the most important cases of the term if you give a shit about civil rights and don't think that folks should be able to use the First Amendment as a sword to cut civil rights protections back.
I mean, the courts have rejected these claims in other states like Washington and New Mexico, and even the Supreme Court refused to take the New Mexico case. That one involved a florist making basically the same arguments as the baker in Masterpiece Cake Shop. So the fact that the court took this case and now is curious to say the least, and all the more reason to watch it. And it also brings us to our next segment, which is how do cases get to the Supreme Court anyway?
Okay, my law nerdy friends, it's time for a lesson on the federal court system. Strap in, this is going to be fun. So a bunch of you have asked us to explain the structure of the federal courts and how a case ends up on the Supreme Court's doorstep. So let's get into that. The most common way for a case to end up before the Supreme Court is by way of something called a circuit split.
What's a circuit split, Imani?
Excellent question, m'lady. Gather around and I'll spin you a tale of circuit splits using a case about free-range boobs to help illustrate the point.
What? Free-range boobs?
Free-range boobs. Free-range, non-GMO, gluten-free boobs. I'm sorry, I cracked myself up. Okay, actually, I'm talking about public nudity. Public nudity, guys. In 2014, Sonoku Tagami celebrated, quote, Go Topless Day by walking around the streets of Chicago naked from the waist up, except for her bare breasts, which she painted with, quote unquote, opaque paint. This was part of her protest of Chicago's public nudity statute, which said basically that anyone who is close to a school or close to any city building can't show their asses in public. But it goes further and bans women's breasts from being exposed in public. Now, here's the actual language that prohibits boobs in public. A woman can't bear, quote, any portion of the breast at or below the upper edge of the areola, close quote, unless it is covered by something opaque.
So here, Tagami argued that the ordinance reached too far in regulating her speech because here, going topless was political protest and therefore expressive conduct. She also said the law violated the Equal Protection Clause because the prohibition on going topless only targets women. But ultimately, the Seventh Circuit said no, being in a state of nudity isn't an inherently expressive condition, and therefore it's not protected speech, and it dismissed her First Amendment claim. So in other words, just being topless on Topless Day didn't express a political opinion that was obvious without Tagami doing something like putting words on her body that said, oh, I don't know, the ordinance is discriminatory and unconstitutional because it primarily targeted women.
But that's ridiculous. If she was attending a Topless Day event to protest the public nudity statute, it seems pretty obvious to me that she was expressing a political opinion by walking around tits out. She wasn't just walking around with her tits flapping in the breeze for the fun of it or for some lewd and lascivious purpose.
Right? I mean, that's pretty much what Judge Rovner, who, by the way, is a total badass, said in her dissent.
All hail Judge Rovner, so say we all.
So say we all. Okay, so the Seventh Circuit rejected Tagami's equal protection claim. They said that even though the ordinance did treat women differently, remember, women couldn't show either their tits or their ass, it was still constitutionally okay because the government had an interest in promoting traditional values and norms, and that was enough to save the ordinance. Which, you know, I'm just going to say, that seems like less compelling of an argument to make than say, oh, I don't know, promoting civil rights by not letting evangelicals refuse to serve same-sex couples. I don't know. I guess that's an open question for the Gorsuch Court.
There's another boobies case out of Colorado. Seriously, what's going on in Colorado? You live there, Jess. What's up with Colorado? Well, you don't have to answer.
Oh, I mean, that's a whole
I don't want to put you on the spot. So there's another titty case where the court said public nudity ordinances did violate the Constitution. That case is currently sitting in the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. Now, let's say the 10th Circuit agrees with the lower court, the district court that decided that the ordinance violated the Constitution. That would mean that the 7th and 10th Circuit Courts of Appeal disagree on whether or not you can walk around with your titties out. Now, in other words, they are split as to what the law should do here. And normally, when courts of appeal are split on how the law should be interpreted and applied, it's up to the Supreme Court to settle that fight, because the Supreme Court doesn't like to have disparate laws affecting disparate states. But a lot has to happen to even get to a circuit split. Generally speaking, first, someone has to bring a lawsuit in federal court. Federal district court. Now, see, that's the court we think of when we hear about trials and evidence and witnesses. Federal district court is basically like a state trial court, but it's federal court. And it's where cases start, and it's where it's where plantains have to prove their claims that they're not bananas. I'm sorry. It's where plaintiffs have to prove their claims, and it's where defendants have to defend themselves. Now, all states have their federal courts organized into districts. So, for example, the state of Kentucky is divided into two districts, the Eastern District of Kentucky and the Western District of Kentucky. Now, where a case gets filed, whether the Eastern District or the Western District, depends on a lot of factors called jurisdiction. And we can dive into jurisdiction in another episode, but just for now, trust us.
Okay, so here's a fun fact. Circuit courts get their name from when judges would literally travel all over the state to hear cases. So now, you know, try and get the image of a judge in his robes or their robes off on a horse sort of galloping across, oh, I don't know, Colorado, New York, everywhere. They said that they would literally ride the circuit. That obviously doesn't happen now. Instead, we have a whole bunch of judges with lifetime appointments sitting in one place deciding cases.
Which, given the way Trump is packing the courts with right-wing assholes, is going to pose a real problem, but we can talk about that at another time, too.
Seriously, and we will. Okay, so back to district courts for a second. Like Imani said, they are the first to decide which party wins and which party loses. And they do that by hearing the allegations and defenses the parties make, deciding which are supported by the evidence, and then applying that case law. Right now, they decide who wins and loses. Now, naturally, whoever loses the case isn't happy about it, and they file an appeal to the appellate court. Like district courts, appellate courts are also organized into circuits, but appellate circuits cover more than one state. Appellate circuits group the states together by geographic reasons, mostly for convenience sake. So, for example, we have the 9th Circuit Court of Appeals, which is a pretty big circuit. That includes California, Washington, Oregon, Alaska, Hawaii, Idaho, even Montana and Nevada. We have other appellate circuits that are smaller in terms of the states that are grouped together, like the 5th Circuit, for example. That's Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi. You get the idea.
And the 5th Circuit is the worst. Well, one of the worst. But there are a lot of appellate judges. So when an appellate court agrees to hear an appeal, instead of bringing the entire bench together, the case first goes to a panel of judges. But unlike at the district court, the appeals court's job is to decide if the lower court got it right or wrong and then explain their answer. So in other words, at the appellate court stage, there's no new evidence, there's no new witnesses. You don't get to try the case over. You just argue on appeal that the lower court either did or didn't screw up. The appeals court will hear the arguments, then make its decision, which they do on their own damn timeline, except for the Supreme Court, which has to decide their cases by the end of their term, which is around the end of June. So, when that decision comes down, the decision from the appeals court, the party that lost has the chance to ask the whole appeals court in their circuit to take a look at the case. Now, this is called en banc review. That's E-N-B-A-N-C review. Sometimes the whole court decides to take the case. Sometimes the whole court says no. They don't always explain their reasons, but usually if the whole court wants to take a look at the panel's decision, it means that at least some of the other judges in the circuit have questions.
Okay, so let's say either a panel or an en banc decision comes down from the appeals court. Inevitably, again, one side is going to be unhappy with the outcome. And if they want to challenge the appellate court decision, their next step is the Supreme Court. To get there, they first have to file what is called a petition for a writ of certiorari. This is lawyer talk for a formal request for the court to take the case. In the petition, you need to say why the court should settle this particular dispute. Usually a circuit split is that kind of reason, but not always, because the Supreme Court more or less does whatever the hell it wants when deciding which cases it's going to take, and it doesn't really explain its reasons for the one it takes or the one it doesn't. So sometimes when the court has decided to take a case, you'll hear journalists say the court has, quote, granted cert. That's what they're referring to.
So there you have it, fellow law nerds. That's your federal court structure in a nutshell. There's also a whole issue of how a federal judge gets confirmed and when they get confirmed. So let's talk about that for a second. Federal judges get nominated by the president and then confirmed by the Senate, first by being voted out of the Senate Judiciary Committee, then confirmed by a majority vote of the Senate. The Constitution says this, but then there is a process. Usually, the president won't nominate someone to the federal bench without the approval of the senators of the state where that nominee is from. To express their approval, senators turn in what's called, quote, blue slips, which literally refers to a piece of paper that says the senator is either cool with the nominee or not cool with the nominee. And a nominee can't have a hearing without these blue slips.
Historically, blue slips haven't been anything that has really been very controversial, but here's a shock. When Obama was president, the GOP fucked around with his judicial nominations by refusing to turn blue slips in. It was one of the ways they could block his nominations, effectively just by gumming up the works and slowing down the process. Now, Democratic Senator Al Franken has tried to do the same thing with one of Trump's horrible nominees, David Strauss, to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals. So now, of course, Republicans want to do away with the blue slip process so they can continue on packing the courts with terrible nominees. Go figure.
And because of the allegations that Senator Franken likes to play non-consensual grab ass, who knows how his ongoing scandal is going to affect his ability to do his job on the Senate Judiciary Committee and whether or not it means that some of Trump's terrible nominees are going to get pushed through.
Yeah, basically everything's the worst.
Yep. Everything is the worst. And to make myself feel better, I think I'm going to go walk around outside topless and see if I get arrested.
I mean, that may not be the best idea, Imani, but you go do you and live your life.
Thank you, Jessica. I will. Okay, hang on. Can everyone help keep their pants on? Okay.
Or your tops, as it may be.
Exactly. So now we are going to do our 5-star listener reviews. We are pleased to announce that most of our reviews have been 5 stars. I think all of them have been 5 stars except for one, which was 1 star and had some comment that had nothing to do with anything that we talk about. So I don't know what that person was talking about. But moving on, we are going to start with Wet Smoke. And the subject of this is Yas. These are my people. Thank you, thank you, thank you for this fantastic podcast. I love the way you make it accessible to people who aren't at all lawyers. Thank you, Wet Smoke. That is what we are trying to do here. Thank you for your lovely comment.
Seriously, thank you.
Next, we have Arful, a wondrous show. I've been following Jessica on Twitter for a while now, but just listened to my first podcast last week, and I fell in love with you two instantly. Important topics, engaging discussion, and legal analysis that a neophyte can follow. What's more to ask for? Keep it up, ladies. Thank you, Arful. We will keep it up. We will keep it up. We're going to keep it up so hard. Okay, I'm getting out of hand. But we are going to keep it up, though. I'm just saying. Here we have one from Dorkness Rising. Dorkness Rising, that's a good name. I like that. The subject is Law for the Rest of Us. Imani Gandhi and Jessica Piglo have perfect voices for podcasts, and they hilariously break down and explain the law for those of us who love it but didn't have the opportunity to go to law school. It's a chilling dive into just how screwed we are under our new tiny-fingered evil overlord, but also inspiring and give us... but also inspiring and giving us real legal news from the mouths of people who understand it. Thank you, Dorkness Rising and Tiny Fingered Evil Overlord. I think it's one of my new favorite names for old tiny hands, old Cheeto Mussolini.
Oh my God, that is fantastic. And I just have to say that not only are our listeners are hysterical and they have the best fucking Twitter handles.
They really do. They really do. Here we have one from Outstanding WC and BK. So I don't know, Outstanding Toilet in Brooklyn? I don't understand that one. I hope you're an outstanding, maybe woman of color, woman, but there's no O. I don't know, but whatever you are, if you're a toilet in Brooklyn, we love you. Funny and informative is the subject. Hey, ladies, I'm really enjoying the episodes, especially your Neil, quote, stolen seat Gorsuch disdain. I'm a novice SCOTUS watcher, and these recent events have been worrying, to say the least. I do have a small grievance. I'd like to follow Imani, but she has me blocked on Twitter, although we've never interacted. think it was a preemptive block due to all the Sanders harassment hate she received. I, for the record, am not a burner, never have been, wincing at how beggy this sounds. Anyway, enough of my whining. I'm a twib head, happy to find your new space and hear all the F's mixed in with the legal acumen and straightforward real-world explainers without worrying about how much money I'll have to donate to y'all's F money in the jar. See, back at Twib, we used to have a jar when either Elon or I would use the word fuck, we'd have to put money in the jar. And because we were saying that word so much, we ultimately had our listeners buying us fucks. So they would be buying us fucks to put in the jar. So people would be like, oh, here are three fucks for Imani to use today. Anyway, at Outstanding WC in Brooklyn, I am sorry I have you blocked on Twitter. It's likely because of some filters that I use. This goes for anyone who follows me who has either a new account or an account with low followers. If you just find me on Facebook, I have a Facebook page, and you message me there, I will definitely unblock you. So please, you can hit me up on Facebook and let me know what your Twitter handle is, and I will unblock you. And thank you for this lovely comment. I don't know if you're a toilet in Brooklyn, but I really hope you are. Next, we have one from Mr. Shiny. Subject: I understand a good 85% of what's going on. Let's face it, I get anxious. I love a good 85%. That's really all we can ask for if you didn't go to law school and you're listening to us ramble about the law.
And I mean, Jesus, in this administration, like, that's pretty fair.
That is absolutely pretty fair. Let's face it, I get anxious when people start talking in legalese, especially in this political climate where legal issues are paramount in deciding the way people can express themselves and their identities, what they can say and do, what rights they have in interactions with their own bodies and with others, and more. It's a lot of stuff that I've been tending to smile and nod when I hear people talking about it, hoping that I can fake it successfully. But Boom has gone through some current issues and helped me understand the legal aspects. I've learned more about how due process works, how my rights and the rights of others are protected, should we decide to kneel during the Star Spangled Banner, and of course about how nothing hopeful can come from Justice Gorsuch being on the bench. Keep up the good work, and feel free to karaoke this comment if you'd like. If you'd led with that, I would have totally karaoke'd the comment. Mr. Shiny, thank you so much for this comment. We really appreciate it. And we love you. Okay. That's a little bit of karaoke for you. Just like a tiny bit, but we're going to get ready for Jess's Captain Abortion karaoke. So, you know, that's going to happen soon. It's got to happen in 2018.
Seriously, ever since Imani made that Ghost in the Machine comment, I've been having the police earworm in my head. So I'll try and figure out a way.
Roxanne!
Sending out an SOS.
All right, before we devolve into utter madness, we have two more. Oh, no, wait, three more. One is from Boom is Right. And the subject is, men, your 3 seconds and the key is up. Yes, I love that subject.
Yes!
Now it's time to listen to Imani Gandhi. I don't know Jessica, but based on the company she keeps, she must be awesome. Listen, this is the stuff. Thank you. Boom is right. Men, your 3 seconds up in the paint is up. Get up. Get out. Women are coming for you. Next, we have Karen LHT. LHT, I don't know what that stands for. Karen Light. Karen, lover of hat tricks. Maybe she likes hat tricks. I don't know. But the subject is...
Hot tamales?
Karen, lover of hot tamales. Yes, that's what we're going to go with. The art of teaching at its best is the subject. So grateful for the time and effort these experts and their staff put into helping us all understand the legal system that shapes and controls so much of our collective and individual lives. This podcast translates jargon, presents information in creative ways, and inspires action. Thank you, Karen. And I really love that you love hot tamales. Those are some really good little candies. Moving on to Carl E. King. Fun, accessible legal commentary by brilliant something or other because the ellipses trails off and apparently the podcast app on Apple won't let me see what else it says. Assholes. Making complex laws make sense is one thing. Drawing lines from what is in the courts and on the books to their far-reaching implications is another. These women do both with music bombs and a catchy tagline. Thanks, Team Legal. Thank you, Carly King.
Thank you.
You very much. And I hope you were going to say that it's fun and accessible legal commentary by brilliant women. But I don't know, because Apple, your podcast app needs work. But that's it for our listener reviews. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for subscribing. Please tell all your friends about us. We want to increase our listenership.
Yes, thank you so much, guys, for listening. We'll be back with another episode in 2 weeks. And in the meantime, if you have a question for Team Legal, tag us with Team Legal on Twitter. Or don't forget, we've got a Facebook group. You can find us. Ask us on that or on Twitter for that as well. And we will see you on the tubes.
See you on the tubes.
Boom Lawyered is created and hosted by Imani Gandhi and Jessica Mason Piclo. The show is produced by Nora Hurley. Our executive producer is Mark Folletti, and Rewire's editor-in-chief is Jody Jacobson.